Hi there, and welcome to the Homestead Education Podcast. Do you have a homestead, farm, or just dream of a rural life? This is a show to help you and your kids grow your own food and grow as a person. I'm your host, Cody Hanner. I'm a homesteader, homeschool mama six, and small town enthusiast. I was raised by an old school rancher and blessed by the grace of God to have been exposed to so much of what rural life has to offer. Join me every week to talk about homesteading, homeschooling, and growth with a homestead education. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. I just want to remind you that you can get all of my homestead science books on my website for a new way of teaching agriculture to today's youth and aspiring homesteaders by focusing on small-scale farming and self-sufficiency. If you are a school or co-op and need invoicing, please feel free to reach out to me directly. Hello. It is kind of another one of my late night, oh goodness, I needed to record a podcast before tomorrow episodes. And, you know, honestly, I thought about all day long what I wanted my topic to be. And there's something that I don't want to say has been weighing on my mind, because it's not necessarily a negative thing. It's just been something I've been chewing on a lot. And it has to do with in homestead influencers and homestead educators, content creators, just kind of the whole gauntlet, which includes myself. So I'm not trying to separate myself in that conversation. And for a long time, and for any of you out there that are a content creator in any way, whether it's in the homestead space or something else, there's this thing that they call imposter syndrome, where how am I qualified to teach about something? Or because the only thing we're seeing online is other influencers, especially in our niche, because that's what we follow. That's who we're interacting with. That's who our audience is. And we feel like everybody on the internet is talking about homesteading. So where is there room for me to come and talk about homesteading? And, you know, something, you know, and that's where the imposter syndrome comes in. Like, for example, even myself, I feel like, okay, I grew up ranching. I have my degree in agriculture. I worked in commercial ag. I consulted on small farms and getting their food safety certifications. We run our own successful commercial homestead. And I've spent some time in the, you know, online marketing, social media realm. Okay, this is something that I absolutely can do and can teach on. But then, yes, when I spend all of my time around other influencers, I think how there's no space for me left to teach what I have to teach, even if what I have to teach is different or better or whatever than the next influencer that's out there. And I'm not saying I'm better. I'm just kind of, as I'm working through these thoughts for myself, even what I have is different or better or a new message or anything like that, where is there space for me? Or if you are in my shoes, where is there space for you? And what I always refer back to something that I heard Jill Winger say one time, which is that, or maybe it was a guest on Jill Winger's podcast, I can't remember. For every person that knows more than you on a topic, there are 1,000 people that know less than you on that topic. So yeah, there's definitely people that have been homesteaders longer than me who, study more on homestead and agricultural type topics than I do, because I have turned my focus on homeschooling and self-sufficient kids and, you know, history and some of those topics to build my educational business, versus I'm now seeking out information from other influencers on how to grow my tomatoes the best. Even though I have the basic concepts of how to grow a tomato, that was never an overwhelming thing for me. I didn't like hit COVID in 2020 and be like, I want to grow my own tomato and I don't even know where to start. Like, I knew exactly where to start. I'd been growing tomatoes since I was a kid. And my parents grew tomatoes. And I mean, just growing tomatoes is just a thing for me. But, you know, as I look more into, I want to actually grow enough tomatoes to support my family, not just through the summer, but for canning to support us through the whole year. I need to figure out how to sustainably grow enough tomatoes in a small farm, or a small plot setting, to feed our family of six and potentially others within our community, because I'm really big on local food. So I'm actually seeking out educational material, content creators, influencers, those types of people in order to more efficiently grow my tomatoes. So I feel like we have this, you know, there is a network of different people have more information. And I even went through a little bit of a phase where, as I was figuring out what type of content I wanted to provide, above on social media, above and beyond the content that I'm providing within my business, like the podcast and my curriculum. A big thought that I had was, well, I don't want to be just another person saying three tips to growing the best tomatoes. And then everybody has three tips to growing the best tomatoes. Like, that doesn't make me stand out. So I thought, you know, after 2020 and so many people dove into the growing their own food, self-sufficient thing, you know, Joel Salatin talks about the 6 years rotation of the back to the land movements. The first 2 years is the honeymoon. The second 2 years is when people realize what really is going into it. And the third 2 years is when people are selling out and getting out. And I thought, you know, when I really started doing content creation, I was kind of right at the end of the honeymoon phase for this movement, of the back to the land movement, which I am going to like circle back to the back to the land movements. But I was at the end of the honeymoon, kind of the beginning of the reality is setting in. So I thought nobody else wants the three tips to growing the best tomatoes. At this point, they want those like hard-hitting information, like not just the three tips for growing the best tomatoes. They want exactly what fertilizer to use. They want, and I actually hardly ever talk about growing tomatoes, but I'm using this one as an example. They want the exact trellising techniques. They want the exact date when to plant them because they want all of the things they have to figure out gone so that they can just focus on growing their tomatoes and caring for their goats and whatever else it is that they're doing on their homestead to be more self-sufficient. And so they want all of those hard things taken out, which there is some truth in that. And that's where I really wanted my niche to be. I want to be that person that is giving them not only the how-tos of to take away all that extra thought process, but also to teach them how to work that into their everyday life. And also, you know, point them in the direction of the books and things like that that they need to read. Because, I mean, I'll tell you what, I've read hundreds of homesteading books and hundreds of sociology books and hundreds of books on homeschooling. And if I can be the person to say, like, oh, don't waste your time with those, read this one, that would be the perfect place for the homestead education to be, which is what I really wanted my platform to sit on. And even though that is where I spend more of my time, I like to be the more cerebral, the more intellectual, the diving deeper type of person. I haven't exactly left the three tips on growing, you know, the best tomatoes level because I realize that if we want to keep that honeymoon stage of homesteading and the realistic stage of homesteading going, there have to be enough of us still exciting people who haven't taken that plunge yet. Because if only people kind of getting into that interest level or being like, you know what? Maybe I can homestead. Maybe it is time for my family to start doing this. And because if they hadn't before, they don't need to be finding someone that's like, okay, the best way to homestead is to be doing chemical testing on, or, you know, I don't know, some sort of testing on your compost 3 times a year and, you know, having it sent off to a lab and blah, blah, blah. They're going to be so overwhelmed. Like, that does not need to happen. And I admit that at this point, when it comes to my homestead teaching, I call it a commercial homestead. That's what we have. We have a commercial homestead. We raise like 350 hogs a year. I'm not really talking to the person who is just raising two pigs every year to put in their freezer, or to the person that is maybe breeding one sow a year to put a couple in their freezer and sell a couple more. At this point, I'm working with and emulating people that have entire hog operations that are sustainable on pasture as much as possible, feeding non-GMO feeds, that type of thing, but can afford that, how they're affording it on a commercial scale and things like that. So for the beginning homesteader, that goes, I want to start with pigs, and they look up how to get started with pigs. If they were to come to some of the stuff on my site, they're going to be very overwhelmed by what they see, because I'm giving information on tracking, farrowing cycles, and the best way to meet your local food niche, and how to get butchered at a USDA plant, and how to do direct to consumer sales and that type of thing in my business stuff. And then, like I said, I'm, seeking out information from Joel Salatin and White Oak Pastures on how to increase my hog operation. But there's still so many people that are just ready to learn the three best tips for growing their tomatoes. And that is amazing. That's amazing that there's people still seeking that out, because that means that this back to the land movement is potentially not waning. And that is exciting. That is really exciting, because what has happened is, in my research, since the Industrial Revolution, which I don't know, care who you follow, all we ever hear is that, like, the downfall of our entire society was the Industrial Revolution. And, obviously, oh, I don't know, like, we couldn't meet the demands of the number of people we have in the world and that type of stuff without the advancements of the Industrial Revolution. However, there's a lot of frivolous things, a lot of ways in which people have been turned into, like, robots in the way we think and the way we think, like, society should run, that happened from the Industrial Revolution. That is, like, if we can turn that around, we are still within a window for that to be reasonable. It's only been like 100 years since, like, yeah, I mean, I know the Industrial Revolution started in, like, late 1700s, but I mean, it, like, really, like, boomed in the early 1900s. So we're only looking at 100 years. Like, we could throw that out tomorrow. Maybe we should. I don't know. I know that we saw in 2020 that it was very fragile. The infrastructure was not as strong as they've led us to believe that it is. And that if we really wanted to, we could start chipping away at that. And people were really excited to start chipping away at it. And then they got comfortable again and they got complacent again. And I don't think we're in a place where we can be comfortable and complacent yet. I think we still need to strongly pursue chipping away at that infrastructure. But so over the last 100, 150 years, there have been multiple back to the land movements. And, I had heard that, like, in the 60s, like, I wasn't alive in the 60s, but, I've heard about people talking about that in the 60s with the, like, hippie movement. I grew up in Northern California. It was hippies. When I moved to Idaho, people were like, oh no, we don't call them hippies here. They were the back to the landers. And so then I kind of started researching that a little more with some of the history research that I've been doing. And I think we've had, like, six back to the land movements. And that in 150 years, I mean, I'm gonna, like, pull my calculator out and do some math right now. And I don't even think it's been a full 150. But I mean, that's 25 years. That's every generation has had a back to the land movement, pretty much. That tells me that every generation is tired of what is going on. That every generation has seen that what is happening is not working, and it's just getting worse. Like, we are pulling away from the land more and more all the time. I mean, it was at some point in, it was around World War I. I can't remember the exact date, but that was the first time the census showed that there was more people living in urban communities than rural communities. That, I mean, that's not that long ago. That was, like, right at 100 years ago, that the majority of the people in the United States, And I'm sure that it's very similar for a lot of other Western influence countries. There was more people living rurally than there were in urban communities. We just weren't designed that way. And people are they don't want to do it. But society has such a pull on them, and all the shiny objects and all of the ease of, like, you don't have to work hard to grow your own food and worry about where the money is going to come from and all the labor and that type of thing. We're going to dangle this job in front of you that pays you X amount of money, and then you can take that money and go to the grocery store and buy the food that you need. And slowly you stop growing any of your own food, whether that's as a person, as a family, as a society. And then you are a slave to that job in order to eat. Eating is something we have to have. Like, I mean, I can be a slave to my job to have my cell phone, but yeah, I have to have my cell phone to run my business. But if the whole world were to crumble tomorrow, my cell phone is just a brick. Like, I could use it as a weapon, but other than that, it's not something that's going to do me any good. I have to have food. My family has to have food. My community has to have food. Like, literally, we could go out without almost everything else. I mean, we need shelter and we need heat, which all are, come from our natural resources. But without those three things, there's literally no way for us to survive as a society. But society has said, you don't need to be able to do that yourself. We can provide it for you with this dangled carrot. And that is where our problem has come from. So, like I said, every generation pretty much has said, this isn't right. I want to go back to the land and figure this out myself. And we saw that with the original homestead movement. We saw that with the secondary homestead movement in the 1900s. We saw it in the 60s. I think there was another one in the 80s. And I know that we're definitely in the throes of one right now. Why can't we keep this momentum moving forward? Like, why do we have to let this go? So, kind of circling back to the homestead influencers. One of the roles of women on homesteads, on farms, I mean, literally all the way back to the beginning, I don't know, the beginning of time, the beginning of the US, I don't, whatever. I'm referring more strongly to the US right now because that's where I'm doing my history, or that's where I'm doing my research right now. And that is also where, like, land ownership and things like that really became prominent for the first time. So, women's roles all the way from day one on the homestead. And now I'm referring to homesteads not as the homestead movement, of, like, the 1850s to the 1986, I think, was the last homestead patent written. But I'm not talking about that type of homestead. I'm talking about any type of home where a farm and sustainability was coming from. So, I mean, we're talking like 1600 Jamestown. The homestead was you grew your crops, you had your animals. The women did most of the stuff to make the homestead sustainable. And by sustainable, that means they were dealing with the, like, I almost call them like the kitchen animals, like the cow and the chickens, because the stuff that was providing food on a daily basis like that, they handled them. They handled the gardens. They handled making clothes, making candles, anything that they could do to keep any cash funds that were raised or earned from growing crops from going to the sustainability of the family. Now, obviously, there was things that always needed to happen, or, they could buy a bunch of sugar and that sugar would last for a year, or they could buy, I don't know, lard or something, and they would make lard candles and use lard for cooking. And but they wouldn't just, they weren't going out and buying candles and lard and oil for cooking and all the different things. They weren't buying those things. They were producing those things, or they were buying the base ingredient that they needed to be able to produce those things for the whole year. And then the women, they were also helping in the farm fields. And I mean, there's actually, they talk about a lot of when the Industrial Revolution hit farming and suddenly there was tractors. This made it easier for the women to work the fields. It wasn't always the men. It was like, okay, now what was backbreaking work, running a horse and plow through to, break ground, now there's tractors and the women could do that. And a lot of times the men would, turn to go fencing and expand their livestock operations, or the men would get jobs with the railroad to bring more money in so that the women had more time to do the other things that they do. I think women are, I don't want to say like the unsung heroes of like rural America, but yeah, they kind of are. As a society, historically, I mean, men were going to do the work regardless. And women, and I'm the first one to be like, being a stay-at-home mom is hard work. But I mean, these women were making it where anything could happen, So, kind of this, the homestead influencer concept, I kind of like, even being one myself, scoffed at it a little bit. And I say that just because, like I said, I mean, how many people can teach you the three tips to growing a tomato and still have there be a space for someone else? And I think we've established how there's space. But it still didn't make a lot of sense to me. And then the other day I was reading a book. It's called Staking Her Claim, Women Homesteaders of the US, or something like that. Probably should have brought the book in here, probably should have written the name down. But they talked about during the late 1800s and early 1900s that women, both single women homesteaders and married women homesteaders, would make extra money for their homesteads, whether it was doing it for themselves or to take the pressure off their husbands who were out proving up the homesteads. The women were making the homesteads sustainable, but also needed a way to bring in additional funds to pay for things to prove up the homesteads. They were writing for magazines. They were writing novels or novelettes. They did a lot of those back in the 1800s. And let's see, in 1907, I want to say, the average family subscribed to four magazines. Like, that's a lot that I didn't even realize there was that many back then. Like Sunset Magazine published like 20 some odd articles in like 15 years about women homesteaders. And I realized that there has always been an intrigue for what is happening, whether it's in the Wild West or, just out in the woods, or that sustainability, that grit, that just ability to do something different and on your own and independence. It's been a romanticized concept that women have been able to provide for their families through being influencers for 150 years. Like, just because they weren't doing it on Instagram, they were doing it through like publishing their letters and their articles and their notes. And so, I mean, this is something that, some women, some people would read their stories and it would motivate them to be homesteaders. I did read an article that was talking about, at one point, I think it was Sunset Magazine. It was owned by one of the railroad companies, and that railroad company was trying to get more people to move west, and so they would use the stories of the women's homesteaders to sell magazines, and that would encourage more people to move west. So I mean, there definitely was a ploy with that, and there was marketing with that. I mean, it's like the affiliate marketing of the homestead era. I mean, it's literally a thing that was ha that has always been happening. Now, on the flip side of it, there was the romanticized stories of the homestead, that people just wanted to read it because they knew that they would never leave the city to stake their claim and start a homestead from scratch, but they wanted to hear about it. They were intrigued by it. Just the whole concept of the American dream is to, own land, build it up, be free, be sustainable. And especially for those who couldn't be free, the homestead movement and the writings from these women gave them that window into what freedom could be. And I think that that is what we're seeing in this modern homestead movement, is not only the how-tos, the inspiration, but also giving people a window into our freedom. And when I say freedom, we work our butt off on our homestead. Like, I don't have all the free time in the world that I want. What I'm saying is that we aren't chained to as many systems as somebody that lives in an urban community is. There's oftentimes that we don't leave our house for week, 2 weeks at a time. We have food. Well, we leave our house, but we usually just go into the woods and like huckleberry pick or something, or go hunting. We have food. Okay, yeah, our power is on the grid. I hope that's not a long-term thing. But if we, when we've lost power for like a week in the wintertime, we have a fireplace. We have generators. Yeah, I buy my clothes, I ship things in on Amazon. I'm not totally off the grid. But if some of those things ended tomorrow, like again, I'm gonna be okay without my cell phone. Like, I would just be all right. I have my toilet paper shipped in. Well, I mean, let's face it, if the whole world shut down tomorrow, I would be pretty bummed without toilet paper, but I wouldn't be able to get it from Amazon or the grocery store. So I might as well look at different options. And I'll admit, during COVID, we bought every soft bolt of material that we could find on clearance in case it all went down and I never needed them. So they're all still in the cabinet. So I could have reusable toilet paper and paper towels and everything right in the house. Don't go buy all the bolts of material, but you could. I mean, there's just things that we have put ourselves in a place where we have freedom from so many systems. We homeschool our kids. We answer to no one on their education or their schedule. We grow a lot of our own food. If we couldn't get to a grocery store tomorrow, we would far from starve. We may have to be less picky about what we want to eat. We may not eat as diversely as we previously have, but we would not starve. And we have a sustainable way to continue providing that food. I have seed stores. I know how to seed save. If the things that I haven't done seed saving before on in the future, I have bought all the books that I need, that if I couldn't access the internet, I would be able to do pretty much everything I need to do. We have medical books, we have seed saving books, we have building books, like pretty much everything that you can think of to make sure that we are sustainable if the grid were to go down. And I mean, this isn't really a prepper podcast or a prepper episode. It's more about, like I said, the influencers, that this isn't a new concept, and that we are providing a window into our freedom. And I hope that because we aren't just a handful of women writing articles for newspapers and magazines, and I know that not all the influencers are women, but I know a lot of them are, that because instead of us reaching hundreds or thousands of people, we're reaching thousands and millions of people. And that maybe we can keep this window of the back to land movement open a little longer, or maybe permanently. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining me today. I hope you all keep growing, and I'll see you next week. Did you enjoy today's episode? If so, please head over to your favorite podcast player and leave a comment and review. This helps me to know what you're enjoying and helps others find an episode that can help them. Thank you for joining me today at the Homestead Education, and I hope that I have given you something to think about this week. To help others find me, please comment and leave a review on your favorite podcast player. You can also follow me on Facebook at The Homestead Education and Instagram at Homestead_Education. Do you have questions that you would like answered or just want to say hi? Please email me at hello@thehomesteadeducation.com. Until next time, keep growing!